This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. In her newest book, author Sharon Draper takes us back to the year 1932 to a fictional town called Bumblebee, North Carolina. Draper's protagonist is a young black girl named Stella. Stella unconsciously navigates the complex world of the segregated South until the night she secretly watched a meeting of the Ku Klux Klan. After that, her consciousness and her life would change forever. Sharon Draper is a best-selling author and a former National Teacher of the Year. She's in town for several events, including a reading tomorrow at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh. But first, she's here to talk about her novel, Stella by Starlight. Stella Draper. Stella, yes, Sharon. I called you Stella because I've been so involved with the book that I have conflated you. Sharon Draper, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you. Stella is partly me, so it's okay.
Well, and partly your grandmother. Tell us about this book.
My grandmother was born in 1905. And when she was a little girl, she used to go outside at night and write by the light of the moon. And she wrote at night because she had to work during the day. And so the only time that she could get outside, and she wrote in a little journal. Nobody knew it at the time. Nobody paid much attention to it. Nobody valued it as, these are treasured words. That was just what, her name was Estelle, but they called her Stella. That's what Estelle did. So it wasn't until years later, when she passed away in 1983, that she gave the last remaining journal to my father and said, do something with this. And so my father gave it to me. He said, you think you're some kind of writer? Write my mother's story. So it has been a very long time that I have had this book on my heart, and I've been wanting to write it.
Your grandmother did not have much in the way of formal education.
She only went to the fifth grade. As a matter of fact, she was forced to stop going to school in the fifth grade, but she didn't want to. She wanted to continue to learn. So she would go outside at night to do her reading and her writing, because that was the only time she could. She was my muse way back in 1915, and I didn't know.
What happened when you knew? What happened when you suddenly had both the gift and I suspect to some extent the burden of these journals?
Nothing happened at first. It was a very, very gradual process. When I was a little girl, about the same age that she had to stop going to school, I used to go every summer to her house because my father grew up in this little town in North Carolina, and my entire family on that side of the family grew up in the same little town. So we would go every summer and we would listen to the stories and we'd listen to the old people sit on the porch while the crickets would creak and the lightning bugs would flash. And we would sit on the porch and listen to the stories. I had no idea that I was taking notes. I was just a little girl listening to old people tell outlandish stories. So it was years before all of that came back to me, and I decided to add those stories and that atmosphere of being on that farm, in that house,
in Rutherford County.
In Rutherford County, North Carolina.
So tell us about Stella, the fictional Stella, and the fictional Bumblebee, North Carolina.
Bumblebee, North Carolina is very much like the real town, which is Union Mills, North Carolina. I can say it because we're here. And I'm so glad to be here in North Carolina and talk about the book. But it is not the real town. Bumblebee is fictional. Stella is fictional. She's based on my grandmother. She's my grandmother's essence. She's my grandmother's spirit. But it's her childhood. It's my father's childhood. It's my childhood all put together. And Stella's 11, and she's in the fifth grade, but she's not forced to leave school. She's in school, but she struggles. She has trouble in school. She has trouble writing. The real Stella loved to write and would go outside to write. In the book, Stella goes outside to write because she's not very good at it. And she's afraid that her mother is going to find out that she has failing grades in her notebook. And Mama back then did not tolerate that kind of thing. And she knew that her mother and her teacher, who go to the same church, of course, would talk at some point, and it would all come to pass that she would be told, it would find out that she was having trouble. So she struggled with writing. She had good thoughts in her head, but she had trouble getting those thoughts onto paper. So she would write in her little journal.
And you talked about back then. Back then is 1932.
Yes. I placed the story in 1932. Students asked me, why'd you pick 1932? I said, because I can.
Good.
And the reason, though, is because there was a pivotal election that year. Roosevelt was running for election. Nobody liked Hoover. And people said that Roosevelt would win in a landslide. So when Stella's father decides to go and vote, people say, well, why are you doing this? You know, he's going to win without your vote. It won't mean a thing. And Stella's father said, it will mean something to me.
Hmm. When, you know, I wonder if I can ask you to read. Well, I'm going to ask you to read two things. But first of all, you occasionally break into Stella's hand as she attempts these, she makes these attempts at writing. And as you say, she struggles with it. And I wonder if you can give us a sense of Stella's voice, or at least her literary voice, with a note about that very election.
Stella, I include Stella's writing throughout the book. And this one is, a neighbor gives her a typewriter. So she practices her writing on a typewriter like a real newspaper. So this is Stella's story called Landslide. I've included in it her typos and her mess-ups and her scratch-outs so that it's real for students who read it. Since I have this typewriter now, I will pretend to write a newspaper. I will call it Stella's Star Sentinel. I finally learned how to make all capitals. Still can't fix mess-ups, though. This thing needs to be able to erase. Franklin Delano Roosevelt is the new president. He won in a landslide. Landslide makes me think of rocks and dirt falling down a mountain. Not sure what this has to do with an election, but maybe it does. My papa voted. He is a pebble. Lots of pebbles make a landslide, right? His vote counted. Roosevelt will move into the White House and we'll have a fine supper to celebrate, I guess. Papa had cornbread and buttermilk and beans with his friends at my house. I bet Papa enjoyed his celebration more.
Sharon Draper reading from her novel Stella by Starlight. She's going to be at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill tonight, Quail Ridge Books tomorrow, with us here on The State of Things. I think this sets up a theme that runs throughout the book, which is a theme of hope. Right here, sort of in the middle of the Depression, Roosevelt, who personified hope for a lot of people. But also, you don't pull any punches when you talk about the stakes, what it is that Stella sees, and the kind of odds and obstacles that she's facing. If you can, give us a plot summary, and then maybe I'll ask you to read again for us.
At the very beginning of the book, Stella and her little brother Jojo, who's 8, are outside in the backyard. And their backyard was the woods. And beyond the woods was a pond. And beyond that pond, they see something burning. And it's a cross. And they know that a cross burning is something very dangerous. So they hightail it home and tell their parents, who can't really do anything. It's like, what do? We call the sheriff? No, that's not a wise thing. So they bring the members of the community together. All the men from the neighborhood come together to Stella's kitchen. And they sit around and they talk about what can we do. And it's mostly protection for their families, protection for the community, a kind of a solidarity of the people of the area that we will stand together against this unnamed but probably dangerous threat.
Will you read for us again? And now this would be in your voice as a writer. Sharon Draper is the author of Stella by Starlight, and this is aimed at, while you're finding that, tell us about the audience here, the target audience for this book.
The target audience would be children between the ages of 9 and 99. It's okay. Mostly for kids in middle school, late elementary school and middle school. But it would be very, very useful for adults as well.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I'll read a section that talks about Stella and her writing and her fear and talking about her fear of the grand dragon of the Ku Klux Klan. And boys at that age are interested in real dragons. And so Stella is talking to her friend, Tony. It was a perfect October afternoon, with the sun screaming through what remained of the russet leaves of the maple and beech trees that lined the road. But Stella focused on kicking up clouds from the reddish dirt at her feet instead. She hadn't written a thing for the writing contest, not one single word. "What's got you all cattywampus?" Tony asked her. "I'm just missing the summer," Stella replied with a shrug. "Everything gets crunchy and fades away in the fall and winter." "Me, I like the fall," Tony proclaimed, pretending the tree branch he'd swept up from the side of the road was a sword. "And I like the way you say stuff," he said. "You're not ordinary, and not crunchy," he added. Stella smiled at him hesitantly. "Thanks, I guess," she said, wondering what being not crunchy meant. "I was just thinking about the writing contest and what I could enter." She hoped she didn't sound stupid. "Words fall out of the sky like leaves, girl. Grab a couple and write 'em down." "You make it sound so easy," she said, catching an apricot-colored leaf in midair as Tony whacked the mottled white trunk of the birch tree. "Quit trying so hard. Just write what you see. Write what you think. That's all I do." He scooped up an armful of leaves and showered them over her head. "Quit it," she said, brushing dust and specks from her hair, laughing. "You'll think of something," he said easily, brandishing his stick at an invisible enemy. "But me, I think instead about writing about baseball or football. I'm going to write about a knight who slays a fire-breathing dragon. He beheaded the dried blooms of a hydrangea bush." "Sounds like a great idea," Stella told him, steering clear of his pretense at knighthood. "You could write about dragons, too," Tony said, now knighting a small boxwood bush. "I'm lousy at writing make-believe stories." Tony tossed the stick aside, wiped his hands on his pants, and faced Stella directly. "So write a true story," he challenged. "Write about what you saw by the pond." "Oh, I couldn't," Stella declared. "It's too dangerous." "Why the heck not? And by the way, did you know the head of the clan is called a Grand Dragon?" "He is?" Her palms instantly grew sweaty. "So write your own dragon story. I dare you." With that, he turned on his heel and ran ahead. Stella kicked up the red dust the whole rest of the way home, wondering if she dared.
Sharon Draper reading from her new novel, Stella by Starlight. She'll be reading tonight in Chapel Hill at Flyleaf Books, tomorrow at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh. I think you underscore in that passage kind of beautifully what, in some ways, Stella's transition from navigating those unwritten rules, right? All that unspoken, what do we do?
Yes.
Which is can be as clear as the sign on the drinking fountain, what the rules are, and yet not. And those invisible dragons that she, as a writer, needs to make visible. And yeah, her palms get sweaty, huh?
Yes. So there's all kinds of dragons. There's the make-believe dragons in the books that she reads. There's the real dragons from the clan who kinds of threatens her father and the other men as they register to vote. They said, "You beware of dragons." So dragons are real and imagined in Stella's life. And she has her own dragons and demons that she has to deal with.
And the fear of if I make this real, if I bring this to the page and tell the story nobody wants to tell, there's danger.
There's absolute danger to herself and to her family and to her community.
How did your grandmother's journals entries play into this particular story?
My grandmother's journal, I don't travel with it because it's so valuable to me, and there's only one of them. Is special because it's in her own handwriting and she writes her own thoughts and ideas. There's actually very little of her in this book. It's her essence. It's her spirit. It's her yearning to write. It's the fact that she was the one that inspired me to write, and I didn't even know she was doing it until it was too late, you know, to thank her for being that little girl who was the writer. And I didn't know when I was 11 that I was going to grow up and be the girl who was a writer. So I owe so much to her.
Well, you did at a certain point become a writer, again, before you acknowledged your debt to your grandmother. What was it like in that moment when you realized, oh, this is a big part of why I'm where I am today, a best-selling author? You've already had some best-selling books under your belt, many awards. What was that moment like for you?
when I discovered that I wanted to be a writer.
No, when you discovered that your grandmother played a bigger role than you thought it.
It was very gradual. Yeah, it was very, very gradual. I loved my grandmother. I loved spending time with her. But when I realized that what I had was a treasure, and a lot of times children don't realize what treasures we have. And I tell the young people that I talk to talk to your parents, talk to your grandparents, listen to their stories, because they'll be gone soon. And you have to be able to grab hold of that. So when I finally realized that she was the one, I always thought it was my mother who was my writing inspiration, because my mother did not tolerate anything less than an A for me. And I obliged her and never did. And I always made good grades, and I always liked school, and I always liked reading and writing. But it was my grandma from North Carolina that was the inside spirit beside me. And so now, as I travel around North Carolina and I travel around the rest of the country, I have Stella, the real Stella, with me. She and my dad travel with me. And that, I just can't express how important that is to me.
I'm talking with author Sharon Draper today on The State of Things. Her new novel is called Stella by Starlight. She's going to be reading in the area over the next couple of days. You get back to Union Mills now and then?
The last time I was in Union Mills was several years ago. I took my father, and it was so wonderful because the local high school honored him, and they gave him a parade and a celebration, and they thanked him as an elder, you know, like the way you're supposed to honor an elder who has come home. And it was a wonderful, wonderful time. And he took me and showed me the little one-room schoolhouse that he had been, that he had gone to. And, you know, we saw all of the local places. We went back to that house where he had lived and his mother had lived and his father and his grandfather. We went, and the house where I heard those stories. And so we went back, and I have not been in a while, but I will go back with this book sometime this year.
This book, this novel, is a story first. It is a well-wrought tale. And in it are embedded many lessons and a lot of meditations about sort of how we build social order, how we build in unwritten rules, and how people at points along the way develop the courage to expose them. So to what extent do you, and I think it's really well done, that it's not a didactic book at all, and yet these lessons are embedded. Do you struggle with that as a writer? Do you have to sort of go through and say, oh, wait, I'm trying too hard here?
I try real hard not to make a story didactic, because a student will turn you off if you try too hard to say thou shalt not or thou must learn. And so I want the reader to just fall in love with Stella and follow Stella's path as she discovers things and learns things. And so I try real hard not to make it teach anybody a lesson. And so Stella, as she learns things, develops slowly and gradually and becomes a likable person. She moved from being my grandmother to a character named Stella to a real girl named Stella. And I don't know when that happened. It just kind of happens through many, 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 many revisions. And anybody who thinks you don't have to revise is sadly misinformed.
There it is. That is what sorts the great writers from the not-so-great, the ones who actually take the time and have the perseverance to edit and rewrite. Sharon Draper, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
It has been delightful. Thank you so much.
Sharon Draper is an award-winning author whose new book is called Stella by Starlight. She'll be reading at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill tonight at 7 o'clock, Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh tomorrow at 7, and you can get that at our website, stateofthings.org, if you missed it just now. Just ahead, a new take on conjoined twins, Chang and Aang. Stay tuned.